You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Twenty on a Thursday, talking transition, and the gunner's transitioning right now. He's driving home. So, yeah. What's up, man? What are you doing?
Just driving home. I was at a buddy's house this morning.
What were you doing? You went and shot last night, yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How'd it go? What'd you shoot?
I didn't shoot. I was teaching.
Oh, so you taught the women again?
Yeah, Tuesdays and Wednesday nights.
Wow. You're loving that, aren't you?
Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun. I mean, you see their confidence build. They feel confident. It's an empowering thing when you learn how to use it right.
Talk to me about how did this all come in your direction? Go ahead.
It's through the church that I go to, and they were having a women's group, and they decided, the girl that was running it decided to shake it up a little bit, do something different, and wanted to do pistol instruction. So they approached me and asked me if I was willing to do it. And at first, I was a little apprehensive because I've never really taught basic, like real basic stuff. Most of the people that I stood in front of had, you know, a lot more understanding of it. And so when I jumped into it, it was actually pretty easy. And it's just a little, I think it's a lot more rewarding because you have people that have, some that have never even held a handgun in their life. And they learn how to use it right. And they're doing really well. And, you know, like you said, you see them come in really nervous, and then when they leave, they're high-fiving and keeping their targets and laughing and joking and having a great time.
How long is the program of instruction?
When the group meets, it's 2 hours, and then at night on the pistol range, it's 2 hours both nights, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And so we had some husbands last night that were there to watch their wives, and a couple of them approached me later and like, man, I could use this too. I mean, I thought I knew some, but you're teaching stuff that I didn't know.
Did you tell them, yeah, I'm the gunner, okay? That's how that stuff goes.
Yeah, there's a lot in the world you don't know.
So are we going to stand up the men's leg of this? And
we'll see. I mean, we'll come into it and then... I think once I start this summer, when I start teaching concealed handgun license and permitting people, it'll open up a bigger door. So,
but you know, I it sounds like you know, seeing kind of the light go on and the boogeyman go away, and then proficiency increase. It sounds like you're enjoying that a lot, and you know, because you're right. You know, Mike. You know, deals with high-end shooting in the military. And this is almost the exact opposite. Low-end, entry-level, but...
Basic.
You sound like the rewards are... You know, the other thing Mike has a gift for is that, he it's serious stuff, but Mike always has a gift for making it fun. And so that's probably a little bit different for them as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You get a lot of compliments at the end that just, you know, it's just the way you teach and the way you come across. People open up to it a little bit better.
Right. Because, you know, everybody's gone through where, like, the gun asshole shows up and then it's like, wah,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, in that one, you know, with the men, the men are different when you teach them because you gotta humble them. You gotta show them that they don't know what they're talking about. And then you embarrass them, and then they listen to you.
Right. And that's like shooting fish in a barrel because you know it's going to happen, right, Mike?
Yeah, that's too easy. You're like, okay, let me go ahead and show me what you know. And they're like, oh, and then you're like, okay, watch me. And then you shoot, and they're like, okay, wow, all right.
And so the only question is, who's going to be that guy?
Yeah. And usually when you stand a bunch of guys, it's 80%, 90% of the class is that guy.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, the worst group you can, the most difficult group that you can teach is males, you know, from the age of 21 to about 49 or so. Because, I mean, they got a lot of habits in the way they were taught or self-taught. You know, and it just, you break that stereotype of, you know, all men know how to shoot because that's just the way guys are.
Yeah, that just so people know that that's not exactly how it works.
No.
Who tend to be, so let me ask you this, who tend to be the best students, marksmanship stuff?
The ones that, well, men-wise, the ones that are a little bit more open-minded. And they leave their egos behind. And then what I'm finding out is women, almost all the women. Which is nice.
Interesting. Who are the best students in the when you were on active duty? Was there different groups that were better students than others? Same kind of issues?
Same kind of issue. You know? I mean, in the military, it's a little different because when you stand up in front of them and you got that bursting bomb on them there, they just kind of automatically, they're like, okay, they listen.
Yeah, maybe.
When I teach law enforcement, you know, because law enforcement's different too, and they're difficult because, you know, they go through their weapons academy at the police department, and then they qualify once a year. And so, you know, they think they know a lot, and when you show them stuff, they tend to be a little more open. After a while, and then they get it, and then they're right on your heels every time.
So is there always that that chest pumping?
Yes.
That's just a part of it?
That's part of it you got to deal with, yeah. Yeah, you got to deal with it.
Well, I guess you should expect it, man. When you got a name like The Gunner, hello? You know, they've got to challenge it a little bit. They're not just going to accept it.
Right.
you sound like you've had enough of that for one lifetime.
Yeah, that stuff got old fast. I mean, you know, in most of the departments that we trained, they after a while they caught on and, you know, and it's good. I mean, I look back and a lot of the police departments that I worked with, they adopted what we taught them, and now that's their standard.
Right. Interesting. Do you have a favorite part of marksmanship that you enjoy teaching more than another?
No, not really. It's all fun. I like the more. I actually like the more tactical side. The, you know, the room clearing, the actual offensive portion of it.
Right. Right. But, Mike, can you describe for people, I mean, our facilities for that stuff have changed incredibly from, you know, we used to have cinder block combat towns, you know, one per base, maybe three blocks by two blocks, maybe three blocks by two blocks, maybe four blocks by three blocks, certainly that we would go play Buddha Buddha Jam in there. Can you tell people how that's... How that's changed over the
now
course?
They're city. I mean, they're full on city. You can move a population of about some of those big places. You can move a population of about 25,000 people in there. You know, they're huge. They're you know, the metropolis type. You know, hundreds and hundreds of buildings, three dimensional. There's the basements and sewer systems, and there's, you know, second story, third story, fourth story buildings. You know, a lot of it's you know, it gets really complicated when you get really those big areas.
And then talk to us about so when you're going through those, and you can do those live fire.
Some of them yes, some of them no.
Okay, all right.
It depends on how they're built. Yeah.
All right. The And then when you go in there, you know, explain to everybody what you're teaching in terms of you know, the entire unit. So what are you teaching when you take a platoon into a city?
You're teaching how to communicate and work as a team and to move, really just how to cover those spaces that, you know, those blind corners, and how to work in an environment. Shooting in an urban environment is, even though it's got buildings, it's still an environment. It's an urban environment, not a desert environment or a dense forest or, you know. So you just got to look at it as a different type of environment you're in. And then there's different skill sets you need when you're in there.
Single most important skill in the city is?
Situational awareness.
What does that mean?
Knowing where you're at, knowing where the enemy's at, knowing where your team's at, and then knowing where you're moving to your next objective. And then not getting too far out in front of people, always having supporting fire. So it's a ballet of synchronizing your fires, your movement, everything. That's got to be key.
It sounds like patience is the key to that, because that stuff doesn't happen quickly most of the time.
Oh no, you get a lot of guys that go in there and they turn into this individual. They think they can do everything by themselves, and then they learn the hard way that now you get become alone in a city or in a village or a town. You're gonna pay the ultimate price pretty damn quick. Yeah, teamwork is essential when it comes to that type of environment.
I have an email question for you here. Hey Mac, Mike sure has a lot of experience, both I know in Iraq and Afghanistan. Is there a weapon that he prefers to use in the city? Much has been made about the lack of penetrating power, and then in parentheses, not stopping power, of the 5.56 round in an urban environment. I'd be curious to hear Mike's thoughts on that.
A 5.56 is not going to go through a wall, you know, and that's okay. You got to know weaponry. You got to know what your weapon is capable of doing, its limitations, what it's not going to do, and then use it accordingly. And through and be.
We lost him. All right, so. Okay, hold on. We lost you, so you're going to have to start that answer again. We're talking about the discussion about 5.56 or 7.62 in a city, and it's been something that's been written about and discussed a lot in terms of is the 5.56 round too light for that environment?
No, the 5.56 is plenty powerful as far as what you need to be capable of doing. I mean, it goes back to our old discussion before, is the problem with a lot of that write-up is based on the ammunition that we know is not right. It was, at the time, it was like a green tip, you know, the standard NATO round. Once we got through that and we started using different rounds, that issue became really a moot point when it came to employment of your weapon.
All right. That's interesting because, you know, so much has been written about, by the gun guys, and I'm not a gun guy. I just play one on the radio. Because, you know, my experience, you know, 5.56 round, that'll get you. And I think Mike's point is consistently is well aimed, accurate, does a job.
Fire.
Right.
Yeah.
And
shot placement that wins the day, you know?
Got it. Do you have a favorite weapon in the city?
Yeah, an assault rifle, an M4.
Really, that's your favorite weapon?
Mm-hmm. You know, and running close second would be a good handgun. Not with the, you know, not a Beretta, but a good, reliable handgun.
Like?
You know, hell, man, I'm, again, personally, I like the Glocks. That's what's being used, you know, a lot. Some of the military now is using Glocks instead of the Berettas. But, yeah, it goes back to your M4 is going to really going to pave the way for you. So.
All right. The talk to us about the M4. You know, I think we used to see those as Marines. We'd see them and kind of look at them like, whoa, what are those things? And who gets those? Talk to us about the purpose and function. And is there any degradation between the M16 and the M4?
No, so an M4 has got a shorter barrel. It's got a 14.5-inch barrel. It's got a collapsible stock. It's smaller. It's a little bit more wheel. You can wield it a little quicker and more. It's more readily available. The longer guns like the M16, you know, it's a 20-inch barrel. They get to be a little cumbersome, especially in a city, especially when you're up close and you're trying to do room clearing and you got to reposition the gun just to maximize or to, because the space is limited. You know, when you have that big long gun, it's hard to get that gun into action or use that weapon as you're moving around.
So was it built initially to be used in the city? Was it built to be more easier to get in and out of vehicles with? Was it built with all that?
Well, yeah. So it was built mostly for. I mean, if you look at the history of it. It was built for the carbine first came around, like mounted troops carbine. You know, for horse guys on horseback.
Right. Historically,
you know, they needed something that was smaller. Same caliber, but smaller, that they can readily assess, you know, off the saddlebag and then, employ once they got off. And then they became dismounted infantry when they got off their horse. And so then that same philosophy took place later on as we started mounting into vehicles and other things. That's where it's, you know, if you look at history and war, you found the carbines mostly in, mounted troops, mechanized troops. Not so much in an infantry pure unit, you had the longer guns. And that's kind of where we're at today. And then now as we start realizing that because of modern technology and everything else, that shorter barrel will suffice.
The greatest contribution in American history of the carbine was? I'll answer that for you.
Go ahead.
West of Gettysburg on day one of the battle. John Buford and his cavalrymen dismount and hold off an infantry division with his cavalry regiment. And Buford chose the terrain, but the rate of fire in the carbine that the cavalrymen carried was equal to or greater than that which the infantry guys could load with their muzzle-loading rifles. And
right.
Buford was able to hold up Henry Heth west of Gettysburg and actually, you know, and held the city in time for replacements to come up. So the Union was able to kind of choose the ground at Gettysburg. But it was the carbine. That Buford's had, and it was one of the first ones fielded by the Army. They had cartridges, right, that they could load into the carbine. So their rate of fire was I don't know how many per minute, but much, you know, two or three times, that of the muzzleloader. So
the carbine when it came out with cartridges. Well, when the guns started coming out, when they started coming out with cartridges, kind of rendered all the muzzleloaders. Your cap and ball type, really non-existent.
Right. Interesting stuff. I will tell you, so talk to me about a little bit about the barrel. the barrel piece of that. What is, you know, what would be the difference between having a shorter barrel? Let's say, I mean, is there any in terms of the ballistic, you know, at 500 yards that we shoot at?
No, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. I mean, unless you start getting into the precision rifles, then yeah, you know, your longer barrels are better. You're going to get more stability out of the round. But in the case of we're talking about carbines, it's good enough. And I mean, with the ranges that we're shooting at, I mean, you can easily, I mean, I've easily qualified on the reference before, you know, shooting an M4 carbine at 500 yards and hit the target just as easy as I was with an M16.
Wow. All right.
But your trade-off is weight, you know, and length of the gun, so you can manipulate it better.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then I want to ask you a couple questions. I got an email that says this. Hey, Mac, I don't know what Picatinny rails are. I know they're on the battle mug, for God's sakes. But they're also, I see pictures and I see all this stuff mounted on rifles. I'm curious about the gunner's thoughts on that. So, Mike, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about rails on rifles, their purpose, and get your thoughts on them.
Okay.
All right. The gunner joins us. We're talking gun stuff. Go figure. More of Armory Radio on a Thursday, spending some time with the one and only Michael Musselman right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah. Hey, roll the window up, man. What happened?
What?
Roll the window up. What happened? Why are you rolling around, riding around with the window down?
The window's not down.
Oh, man. You should have bought, I thought that was a new truck.
It is.
Oh, my bad. All right. Tell me about rails on weapons. How long they've been around, and what is the benefit? Is there a downside to it? Talk to me.
Well, okay, so they've been around for, you know, some time. Not, you know, in the military they came around probably about 20 years ago. But the benefit is it allows you to attach different things, either your scopes, your thermal, your laser, your night vision stuff, foregrips, you know, bipods, something, you know, then basically what it came out then was it allowed for the individual to actually modularize his weapon system so he can attach different things, you know, to the rail, real simple, and it's hard now to find a gun. I mean, so the real it's kicking off in the civilian world because, you know, everything mimics. Everybody wants that combat looking rifle, I guess.
Right.
And they like to have the necessity or the need to attach different things when they need it quickly and put it back on and still maintain the accuracy.
So let's talk about what are some of the things that on a combat rifle. First of all, let's talk about optics. We've talked about it before. We did it when Will Cosentini was on. But now on every weapon that the Marine Corps has, there's an optic on it. Is that thing that thing's bolted into place, right?
Well, no, it's got a quick detach mount that's okay. Basically attached to the Picatinny rail. And it's got, you know, two levers that you just unlock, and then you can take the device off.
All right.
And then put it right back on to where it was and still have minimal impact shift, so your bullet's not going to move.
All right. So that is where the carrying handle of the M16, the M4 used to sit. Yes.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
And then on the forward Picatinny, on the what they call the free floating handguard, you can mount again your bipods, your laser, your night vision stuff, and then again, so if you don't need it, you can take it right off quickly, just put it back on when you need it. Again, it makes the weapon more modular.
Okay, talk to me. So the laser, can you explain to people how the laser works? And what is, you know, what is somebody looking at the laser with? Can you talk them through that?
Yeah. So there's, on most of the military weapons today, they have an IR laser and a visible laser. The visible laser really is just to use what they call, co-witness. So when you move the visible laser, it moves the IR laser. They're one and the same. So you don't have to put a night vision goggles to look at where your dot on your laser is to make sure it's in the same reference of your optic. So now you just do it in daytime. You can do it in daytime with the visible laser, and you can adjust your visible laser and then turn that off. And then now your IR laser is slave to that where your dot was on your visible laser.
All right.
And the IR laser is really used more effectively to designate targets. So you don't use it all the time, because then you'd have like a WHO concert. Everybody's shining lasers everywhere. So it comes on, it depicts a target, and then, you know, you engage with that. Or you can use it as a team leader where you have a laser, and then you're part of your fire assignment when you give to your squad, hey, on my laser, there's your target. And then everybody's got night vision device can see that IR laser spot. And then they know without, you know, instead of going, okay, that third building on the right, just past that burned out truck, two stories up on the right window, right of, you know, so it takes away all that confusion. You just point a laser and everybody goes, ah, that window. Okay.
All right. And so everybody's got a night vision device bolted to their helmet?
Yep.
Okay. All right. And so when I'm shooting with a night vision device, with my night vision device on, talk to, how does eye relief work? How does sighting work? Walk everybody through that.
So your laser when you do it right, you zero your laser and then you shoot and then you adjust it. So, now basically where the dot is, the bullet's going to strike. So you don't have to hold the rifle up like you're sighting in. You can hold it just kind of, you know, firmly along just lower of where your eyes are and point that laser and then pull the trigger, because you can see the dot with your night vision. So.
Okay, so you're using the IR laser. The bad guy doesn't see. It's not like in the movies where you see all these red dots on them.
No.
Nobody sees anything. And,
right,
and
unless you got night vision devices. Huh?
Yeah, so you got night vision device, and you're able to see the target. You're able to see, you know, your laser on them. And
right.
Does that is it a little bit different relief in terms of weight on the weapon? Is it much weight on the forward on the barrel?
It adds some ounces on the front. You know, they're like 8 to 10 ounces. So yeah, when you start putting all that stuff on, that's the downside of Picatinny rails. Everybody wants to put stuff on those rails. So then your gun starts increasing in weight. That would be the downside.
Let me just
make a quick comment, because a lot of people like lasers on pistols. You know, they get to this point where they like having a laser on a pistol.
Right.
That's the one thing you really don't need on a pistol. Lasers are good if you want to train, because if, let's say, I'm coaching you and I'm looking over your shoulder as a pistol shooter, really hard for me to see what you're looking at, how you're aiming. But if you have a laser on a pistol, you use that in training, you turn that on, now I can see the dot. And now I can see how either it's your grip or your natural point of aim is a little bit off, and your trigger, so if you're mashing the trigger, you're pulling the trigger, I'm going to see that laser dot drop, and I can give you feedback you know, and then we can work with it. That's a great training device for a handgun. Not so great keeping it on there in the tactical play, because then it you kind of tendency to stop looking at the sight, look at the dot on a handgun, and it's just not a good thing to do.
Interesting. Interesting from a training perspective. You can see exactly, instead of a coach like watching your hands and trying to decode what you're doing, you can
right.
You can
see
watch
the dot.
You can watch the dot and see exactly what they're doing.
Right.
Wow.
And if you don't have a coach, I always tell people, set up your phone on a tripod behind you or just right off the side of you and film the target, and that way you can go back and critique your own shooting. Then you see the dot moving around, and then you know what you got to work on. You got to work on, again, grip, stance, natural point of alignment, natural point of aim, you trigger control. You can see all that stuff with the laser.
The email. I start twitching whenever you bring up Gettysburg. When you brought up Chamberlain the other day and explained the real hero of Little Round Top was the officer that intercepted the messenger and occupied the hill on his own initiative, it was fascinating. I'd like to hear more about your Gettysburg studies while at IOC. I got to spend 7 hours there a couple of years ago, and I've got to go back. Mike, do you ever get up to Gettysburg? Were you a fan of going to the battlefield?
Yeah, Gettysburg is it's overdone. I mean, yeah, it's kind of neat to walk the battlefield. I mean, I like, you know, Vicksburg, Chancellorsville, Manassas, Fredericksburg. You know, those are kind of neat battles, too. They're all kind of, each one of them's got kind of unique things to it. But it's, like I said, it's really hard to relate to those because the tactics were so
different
than what you do now. And there are some battles you can point out, you know, hey, this is a clear point of initiative on this guy's part. You can talk through that. But everything else is really kind of lost in translation because we don't do that anymore. It's Napoleonic-type warfare.
The thing that I used to like about it was, and I agree with you, if you go up there and you look at you know, the tactics, it's walking the ground and watching it. To me, the most interesting part of it was the decision-making parts, because they all, and the cool part about, and Gettysburg in particular, one of the reasons I like it is that there was so much first-person writing after the war. So you don't have to go read some author about it. You can go read about what the principals thought of it there. And to me, that's the cool part. When you're reading something that says I, that's when, and you're standing on the battlefield, that's when I think that stuff gets very cool. The weapons, to me, the interesting part about the Civil War is the weapons were ahead of the tactics. As Mike said, still using close order Napoleonic tactics, but because of the, you know, rifled musket, and the accuracy of that thing, the casualty figures are absolutely incredible. And it's not till late in the Civil War when the Union begins to open up their tactical formations and move, together, but not in formation, shoulder to shoulder. And that begins the revolution, you know, away from close order tactics. And so, the ballistics of the Civil War are very interesting because what was the mini ball was what, a 57 caliber or something like that? It was, thing was huge.
Yeah, it was big.
Yeah. And the rifle had made it so accurate, but they hadn't figured out that, man, maybe we should open this thing up. So there's a whole series of technological advances during the Civil War. The first use of the train to move the troops.
Good.
Use of the telegraph to communicate combat orders. Use of hot air balloons for observation. So it's pretty. There's a whole lot of interesting stuff. But if you don't get into that part of it, I think driving around the battlefields, I mean, it's kind of interesting looking at the monuments and whatnot, but what doesn't go away, what we all can learn from is, making decisions with not a whole lot of time, with not all the information you feel like you need, and yet having to be the guy that says, all right, here's what we're going to do, because they all found themselves in similar situations. So it's interesting. All right, what do you got going the rest of the day?
I'm picking up lunch for the wife.
Nice. How's the new job? Is she liking it?
She starts, I think, next week.
Oh, so she's hanging out. So you and Tina hanging out?
No, she's working still at the old job.
Right. I like that.
She finishes up, I think tomorrow's her last day.
And then a new job on Monday.
I think so, yes.
Like it. All right, man. Well, first of all, I'll read you one more email. Hey, Mac, first of all, in addition to you guys being funny sometimes, I love what I learn about guns. I'm so much smarter about guns now than I was before I started listening. I can actually participate in gun talk when my friends do it, and I sound smarter because all I do is repeat what Gunner says.
Come hang out in Granbury. You'll get really, really smart.
Okay, be careful with that, man. He will get you in trouble sometimes. And then he goes on. No, seriously. I love listening to even the discussion today. Picatinny Rails, without the detailed explanation, I kind of sort of know what it is. And I honestly did not know about how nighttime shooting was done these days. I know that weapons have lasers, and I know guys have night vision devices, but I really didn't know that you were simply lasing a target and then viewing it and adjusting it based on that. I thought there was some other mechanism that would be used. So always appreciate Gun Talk. Thanks for doing it, and enjoy the program. So Gun Talk, man. People love it.
Yeah, good to go.
Guns are fun. All right, man. Yeah. Thanks for the visit. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good, buddy.
All right. Bye. There you have it. The Gunner. The one and only Michael Musselman here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. That'll do it. That's right. That is it. We are done. My thanks in order of appearance, Angie Morgan, here on a, you'll hear her momentarily, by the way. Angie Morgan. Angie's become one of my favorite guests, by the way. She's a former Marine officer, and as we talked earlier, Matt, her husband, former infantry guy, former public affairs guy, he's the one who produced The Unknown Flag Raiser of Iwo Jima for the Smithsonian Channel. And Matt produces Crossroads. So it was Matt's work that you heard Ned Seath. So, Matt and I have become friends. And so he heard me, as he listens, talking about my two nephews that were murdered. And then he related the story and said that Angie had suicide in her family. And she talks about it, not afraid to talk about it. So my thanks to her for coming on and talking about that. I think, honestly, the more often that we do that kind of stuff, I think the more people that aren't afraid to talk about it, and I think that's a good thing. Mental health issues all over the place. I read a statistic that said addiction costs employers $1,700 a year per person. Addiction costs employers $1,700 a year per employee. And that is the cost of firing people, and then the search for hiring somebody new, the training of somebody new, blah, 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 blah. It's a pretty staggering number. So, mental health. Honestly, before we started this program, I kind of knew what I knew based on my own experience. But the more I look at it, it's an incredibly huge problem across the country. So my thanks, to Angie Morgan for coming on and talking about suicide. Also, giving her thoughts on the whole Marines United and, online behavior. And really, listen to the interview. But the value of women to the Marine Corps. The male Marines have to, at some point, come to grips with the value that women Marines play in the Marine Corps. The other thing that Angie said, and she's probably the first woman who has said it, in a very blunt way, that the Marine Corps needs to go find more athletic women to be in the Marine Corps. And so you, I think you'll find that interesting as well. And then after that, an unknown battle comrade. We served in Fallujah at the same time, and I was part of the day that he got wounded, was part of my day. And that is Pat Murray. Currently works for the VFW in Washington, D.C. as a lobbyist, but when Pat got out of Walter Reed Bethesda, he went to work for Turner Construction. So, and we have a little bit of a joint venture going between Turner Construction, 100 Entrepreneurs, and All Marine Radio to find 40 to 50 veterans that are looking for work and want to give construction management a try. And so we're looking for those leaders to ply their leadership trade or leadership crafts in the construction industry. And it really seems like a natural fit, supervising crews, working outdoors, getting jobs done, solving problems, managing people. Tell me, what did I just describe? The job of a non-commissioned officer in the United States Marine Corps, in the United States military. So, anyway, my thanks to Pat Murray for coming on. And then the gunner for coming on, and whether we're talking history or guns or whatnot, for all of his expertise and giving us an hour of his time every day. So, Mike's a great dude. And he has a huge following. He has a huge following now. So, anyway, most of all, thanks to you for listening and making us part of your day. God bless you. Thanks for doing it. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast. And that lets people know that we're out there and helps us grow the product. So, have a great day. Tomorrow, we'll be back here, 7 o'clock Pacific time, on a Thursday. All Marine Radio, out.